You're listening to Good People, Bad Intentions, the podcast that focuses on fighters and their stories. Join me, Matthew Pine, as we learn lessons not just from in the ring, but on the larger battle of life. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. And join with me today is Kyle, the real deal McNeil. Hello, Kyle. I'm doing well. I see you're in a vehicle right now. What's going on?
Man, I'm always going between places. I just left a farm, Rainbows End Equestrian Center. It's down near my gym. It's my mother and my sister's farm. My sister's self-employed. So I was just down there helping them roll some bales of hay in and having a little visit, popped into my gym for a bit, put in a little bit of work, and I'm just on my way home now.
You use a term that I think is pretty synonymous with you, which is work, because I've been following, all your social media and all the different things that you're involved with, and seems like you never really take a day off. You're either, in the gym working, or you're working on the 100 acres wild farm.
That's right. 100 Wild Acres Farm is me and my girlfriend Colleen Pace's spot. We've renovated a 200-year-old homestead on 100 acres out in Clam Harbor. We renovated it over the last 5 years, all by hand, walking in and out a kilometer plus into the woods, all throughout the year, all seasons. We've been up there in the winter, the summer, the fall, and it's a lot of hard work, but now it's a beautiful farm with Ospaw pigs, ducks, 13 chicks. And, so we got all of our eggs, all of our bacon, and we live off the land. We do it very old school, very Amish, but it's very nice. Got our solar panels and no bills. Things are good.
Wow. And I'm just wondering, is it something that your family has always done, is like raising farm animals and that stuff? Or did you learn a lot in embarking in this project?
Well, I mean, my sister, like I said, they have 19 horses down there. So my sister's a fully certified trainer. So they've always had, horses, but never a farm in my history over the years. We moved around a lot when I was young, but for me, it's just something I always kind of saw for myself. And my girlfriend, like I said, Colleen Pace, she's very, she's half native and half Italian and just all wild. So everything about her is... is very, we call her the princess of the forest out my part. So,
okay.
She's very comfortable where we are. She runs barefoot all year round, and we live that very Wim Hof style kind of life, where we wash in the creek and we do things very well different.
That's awesome. I used to run barefoot, believe it or not. I was, had the Vibram Five Fingers. And then I progressed to running barefoot, and there's a lot of benefits to doing it. Obviously there's a little bit of a barrier. You gotta, get used to your feet, hitting the solid ground, because we wear shoes for the longest time. And there's been a lot of books, a lot of interesting documentaries on barefoot running. That's really cool.
Well, it's also kind of touches with, not to talk about it too much, but it touches with something called grounding. So if you look at exercise science, you start to read about things like, the importance of grounding. So, working out barefoot out in the grass, for example, and feeling the dirt in your feet and your toes, you kind of get that energy from the earth. So, a few times a week, especially in the warmer months, I like to work outside, barefoot. I'm always walking around barefoot, but in the cold, I'm a little bit more of a wimp. I tend to put shoes on a lot more. Colleen's the one out there running savage barefoot in the winter.
Wow.
Sometimes I carry on, but it's in moderation, especially in camp.
I wanted to congratulate you on your win last Saturday.
It was a good fight, man. He was tough, and he was very game. I mean, everybody was matched up tough for the show, and sadly, I was the only local boy that won. Mm-hmm. But everybody had good wars and good fights, and we're all just gonna kind of take our lessons with us, because like I always say, lessons learned in blood are not soon forgotten.
Yeah, and so, I was just,
you know, we just got to kind of pick ourselves up and keep going.
I just wanted to say, I was looking into, you know, your past fight. The last fight you fought was against Tyson Cave. Were you fighting that super bantam against him?
I used to be a featherweight when I first started. I went 5 and I was a featherweight my early, like I would have been 18 when I went pro turning 19. And then I stayed as a featherweight for the first several years I boxed pro. And I went undefeated and then I dropped a close split decision, you know, arguable. The guy was up and down like a yo-yo all night. But, you know, anyway, I dropped a split decision with a tough Mexican and then went on to win a few more fights. And then I lost a fight against Joey. He broke my eardrum in the fourth round, but I dogged him for the last two. And then, I mean, I was up on the scorecards. I knocked him down in the third round, but he's a hell of a warrior. And in the sixth round, I was up and down quite a bit because I just couldn't stay on my feet. I had equilibrium, and it was a very tough fight. But, you know, I learned a lot in that fight. And I took that fight on, you know, on a chance, and I tried to make a weight class that arguably I should have stopped trying to make years before, because this would have been back, 2014 anyway, somewhere around there. And it was a good war. It was a good war. It was a lot of fun. But at the end of the day, I was 147 walking around back then, and it was hard to be 126. You know, cut 2 years later, I move up to lightweight. I dominate Jesse McMillan. I take the Maritime lightweight title. And then I start having trouble finding fights at 135. But every time I fought at 135, I kicked ass and I took names. But then I go down and wait again one more time for Tyson Cave. I cut 4 plus pounds easy. And I did it in 3 months. And I came in a pound lighter than him just to show kind of like, hey, look how good of an athlete I am, because they told me I couldn't make the weight. And then I called him a fat ass. And then I went in, I did my business. And it was a good fight. But, you know, after round 6, I was closed. He fought a smart fight. I dogged him. I beat him up for 6 rounds. And then he used his experience to box well and pick his shots. He got one drop on me, put me down the 9th round with the beautiful right hook. I got up, I dogged him the rest of the round, and round 11, I just really had nothing left in the tank. I mean, I really had nothing left in the tank going into the fight, truth be told. It was all done on heart, and it is what it is. You know, they stopped the fight. My eye was closed half the fight, and I contested the stoppage. I wanted to keep fighting because I'm a warrior, and I was still on my feet punching, but it is what it is, you know? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, so I took it. I licked my wounds, and I'm stronger for it. I'd love to see him try it now at a weight class closer to me, but I don't know if that'll ever happen.
That'd be a really interesting fight. I'm just curious, how does it feel moving up to welterweight now? Do you feel stronger? How did you feel?
Do I ever? I mean, my coach and me have known this for years that, you know, cutting the 15, 20 plus pounds, I was cutting every weight cut, every camp, you know, I was walking around at 155 easy, sometimes a little bigger, but 155 at least was the lightest I'd walk around. And then I'd go and I'd make 135. And I mean, I'm dropping these guys in fights, but I'm not finishing them or I'm hurting them. And I just don't have that extra little bit in my gas tank. You know, because there's a little something missing. And what it is no matter how good you live, no matter how hard you train or how smart your rehydration protocols are, 20 pounds plus is 20 pounds plus you're taking off your frame. You know, so if you're a strong guy like I am, I'm quite strong at 155. I'm sparring with big guys, light heavyweights, middleweights, super middleweights. I spar with all the big boys. And I can do that at the weight class I walk around. But, you know, when you cut down too low, you pay for it. And that's just that's the sweet science, right? It is what it is. So yeah, I feel terrific at 147. I mean, I didn't feel dehydrated. I felt great. I had fun, man. I could have done another 6.
Yeah. And talk about strength. I mean, I was just looking at some of the feats that you do on social media. I mean, you can do weighted bridges. I've seen videos where you've had people literally standing on you while you're doing a bridge. Oh, yeah. You doing?
I was walking around. Yeah, I was only about 145 back then.
Wow.
I'm a little bit bigger now, but yeah, I that was a thing of mine for a while. I was right into feats of strength, right? So I mean, I still do a lot of weighted neck bridge work. I do a lot of weighted gymnastics, and you know, I'm still working on my planche and my front levers, and I love all of that, right? Human flags, that's my one of my favorites. You probably see a lot of human flag pull-ups and stuff like that on online. But the weighted back bridge thing, that was a very specific skill set that I wanted to develop over the years. And I still play around with it, but I don't do it quite as much as I used to.
Okay.
I used to do it at the end of every workout. I would get guys to stand on me for time periods, and that would do walks even sometimes. And some of these guys were 200 pounds. Some of them were bigger. Some of them were smaller. The most weight I've ever got up there was 550 plus pounds. And it was four people.
Holy smoke.
Yeah. I got pictures and all that stuff on my YouTube. I got a video showing progressions over a 2-year period. Brandon Osborne was actually one of the guys I got up there a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. My buddy Brad, I got him up there. Quite a few people over the years, because Cole Harbour Place used to be my stomping grounds, right?
Yeah.
So I did a lot of my training back in the day.
And segueing now, can we just talk a little bit about your beginnings in boxing, because you've been at this, you're 29 years old now, and you've been doing
I'm 30. I just turned 30 in October. Oh. I'm 30. Yeah.
Happy belated birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Man, thank you. Yeah. Big 3-0, buddy. I don't know where the time goes.
Yeah. So you've been boxing for a long 20 time.
20 plus years. 20 yeah. plus years. Yeah. Wow. Long time.
And
you want me to tell you where it all started? I can run it back. Sure.
Yeah.
So I walked into Twin Cities Boxing with Bobby Tapper when I was probably about 10 years old. And my brother John was boxing at the time. He ended up sticking around for a few years before he kind of moved on. But when I walked in there, you know, Devin Johnson was around. Kyle Sparks would come into the gym from time to time. And Charles was actually one of the volunteers there at the time. Ended up going on to help train me alongside Bob for about the first 9 years I was an amateur boxer. I took my first amateur fight when I was 11 years old, and it was in Newfoundland. I was 92 pounds. I don't think I stopped throwing punches from the minute the bell started until the last bell rang. And I fought a Russian child by the name of Yugoslav Laborshev. Can't forget a name like that.
No,
he's the only Russian kid on the card. I have no idea where he came from. Everybody thought it was really cool, and apparently he had a lot of fights, but it didn't matter. I punched the snot out of him, and it was a good time. And then I went on to have about 10 stoppages back-to-back, because I did what's called machine gun punching, where the bell would ring, and I wouldn't stop punching until the bell rang again, or they pulled me off.
And that's probably the key for, especially at the age, right? Like you gotta show that you want it. And
you gotta get on them quick. You get on them quick and you just throw a lot of combinations. And I feel like judges back then and referees were very adamant about stopping fights quickly. So I got a lot of stoppages very early on. And then I ended up having to increase my level of opposition really quickly. And then it even got to the point after my first 30 or 40 amateur fights where I had to actually start fighting bigger kids, like, you know, 10 pounds heavier, within the 8-pound limit, and fight a little bit bigger. Then I went up a weight class, then I went down a weight class. And that's kind of what I did my whole amateur career, because if I ran out of people to fight, we just decided we would do whatever we had to do to keep the fights going, because it's hard to get a lot of fights in Canada.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, not Canada so much, but Nova Scotia for sure, and around the Maritimes.
And can we talk about, so would you say that your coach at the time at Twin City Boxing was encouraging for people to go pro? Because I know that there's a lot of pros that are still at Tribal today from when that transitioned.
Yeah, I would say Bobby was very... You know, I want to say a little bit, with his approach, he would definitely encourage young fighters that maybe were a little more suited for the pros. He would tell them, you know, like he always told me when I was young, like, you know, you train 2-3 times a day, you're running every morning. You don't really live the lifestyle of an amateur boxer. You train too much. You know, it was always a thing for me growing up. I always trained too much. You know, I read the books of Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, and all the greats. You know, I love mixed martial arts. I grew up being a big Bruce Lee fanatic. Right? So, you know, I was just a lifestyle outside of training, truth be told, all throughout school, which is why now, as an adult, I know so many people from all the years I was in school in Dartmouth and Cole Harbour and high school, and they all come to the fights and they all remember me from when I was a kid telling people, I'm going to be a pro fighter, you know, I'm going to be a businessman, I'm going to work for myself. And if you told me anything other than that, I'd smack you in the mouth. But no, I have a lot of friends and a lot of fans and a lot of supporters. And I'm very grateful because of it. But, you know, digressing back to your point, yeah, I do feel like Bobby did encourage me to be a pro young. He was like, it's better you get in the trenches and learn in the pro game, I think, than wait around. So I had, you know, maybe 100 plus amateur fights, and we decided to flip over. I was fortunate to have as many as I did.
Wow, that's impressive that you had that many amateur fights. That means
I did have a lot. Yeah. I would have them all at once too. It would be like 9 weeks in a row fighting, but then I wouldn't have any for months. That's usually how it happened with us. Mm-hmm. We didn't really get like big breaks, I found.
Yeah, and can you explain or talk a little bit about when you did eventually make your debut? How old were you at that time?
I remember my last few amateur fights right before. I fought Joey Laviolette three times back-to-back, and I had to be 123.6 as an amateur just to fight him because they wouldn't come up to 135 to fight me. So I went all the way down to fight him every time. I beat him the first time. Second time, arguably, I beat him, but they gave him the nod, and even he said after the fight, like, buddy, I don't know what those judges are looking at. It was a war at Palookas, but I won it, you know? And then the third one, I would say he definitely edged me out with his experience. But after that, I went and I fought a guy named Ryan McGrady. I beat him, and I'd already beat him a couple times. I had a few more fights, and then I just decided time to go pro. And they wouldn't let us do it in Nova Scotia, where I wasn't 19 yet. So I went to Shediac, New Brunswick, and I made my debut.
I hope you've been enjoying the podcast so far. This is just a friendly reminder to subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform. That way, when a new episode is released, you will be able to see it first. And also, if you're interested in supporting the podcast, make sure to check out the hats, t-shirts, and sweaters on goodpeoplebadintentions.com. Anyways, back to the podcast. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was 129 and a half. I was supposed to be 126, but my boy was 6'1", and we knew he was going to be a little bit big. So I went up to 129 and a half, and I stopped him in the fourth round with some beautiful overhand rights and some nice shots. It was a bloodbath. It was a bloodbath, and it was a good fight. He was split up early, and it made for a very interesting fight. He was very tough. He had a lot of heart.
Yeah, and that's amazing, though, that so you had to go to a different province in order to make your pro debut.
I did, yeah, because they have, like, a thing here. I think they want you to be at least 19.
Yep.
At least I think that was what Bobby was telling me. So we went to New Brunswick. I ended up going back there, too, my fourth pro fight. I fought Tommy Burdett. He was a big boy. I gave up some weight for it, and he outweighed me by quite a bit. He was easily two weight classes bigger than me on fight night. It's very visible in the pictures and the fight clips that we have. But I got the job done. I outboxed him. I used my footwork and my hand speed. And when it came time and he finally caught me a little bit in the fourth round, I sat down and bit down on my mouthpiece. I dogged him just to show, hey, this is my house. Yeah, so they like me up there.
That's awesome. Now, I want to move the conversation a little more forward, and I wanted to ask you, when the pandemic hit initially, you know, a lot of people found themselves at home, right? No access to gym, no access to, you know, like no motivation to go and work out. When it happened, like, did it change your mentality about fitness at all? Or were you continuously on the horse, you know, working on your boxing, working on your strength?
Well, I mean, I've always been fortunate. Like I said, you know, I feel very blessed because I have a gym and a business called Real Deal Fitness. Mm-hmm. I know we were probably going to work our way there anyway.
Yeah, so of course.
Real Deal Fitness has been my business for over 12 plus years now. I work with youth athletes across various sports. You know, I work with men and women all across HRM, and I have a very good reputation and network I've established over the years as a personal trainer. But I mean, aside from the fact that I had a gym and I was very fortunate in that sense, I've always been, like I said, a workout junkie. It really is my drug, and it always has been. And I wouldn't change it for the world. It's kept me kind of whole at times in my life when things got difficult. So yeah, I was very fortunate during COVID because I was kind of in the first wave. Well, I was definitely in a camp, and then that was weigh-in day because I was supposed to go to Moncton to fight on Nathan Millier's show when they first shut us down. That very first wave, that was weigh-in day. I was 139.6. I was trim, I was fit, and I was ready to rumble. And we were walking out the door when I got that phone call that the lockdown was here. So I certainly just kept that momentum and used it. And, you know, and I was training every single day. I don't think I took a day off all COVID.
And that actually is really good that it segues to sort of a next point. You know, you've had quite a few fights now, right, that have been canceled or moved. Yeah. It's been four fights.
There was Nathan's show. Then there was the show that was supposed to happen out west. I was supposed to fight Carlietto Santoro's brother, Rafael Santoro, for the International Federation or Boxing Federation welterweight title. Mm-hmm. He ended up fighting a 40-year-old on very short notice who had no pro experience. I don't know how they got that approved, but that's who he ended up fighting instead of me. And he got his belt, but it wouldn't have been that case had he fought me, let me tell you. And then the third fight was supposed to be in September at the Wanderers Ground, so that didn't happen. So and then there was supposed to be another one that we were going to take on the road. Now the one that was going to happen on the road wasn't 100% confirmed, so I should say three were canceled because they were confirmed contracts signed. The fourth was just a maybe, right? Mm-hmm. But then we finally just got it done at Scotiabank, man.
I'm so proud.
It was a long time coming, but I did the job, man. I got it done.
When you were getting ready for this recent fight at Scotiabank, was there anything looming in the background where you were feeling like, oh, maybe this might not go through? Like, do those kind of doubts, do they affect your preparation before, like, compared to a fight before COVID?
Definitely. And it wasn't just me. It was my coach, Bridget Stevens. You know, she's like the best coach ever. And my team, you know, we have such a terrific team at Tribal Boxing that, you know, everybody knew in the back of their minds, like this might not happen, but everybody showed up anyway to put in the work. You know, we had the bodies on hand at all times. So I had plenty of sparring, plenty of guys for body drills, plenty of work for one-on-one. And then even when I got that little spell where that cold that was going around, because, you know, Joey got a little sick in his camp. Brett Beaton got a little sick in his camp. I got sick in my camp at least once. I only let it take me out for a few days. And I was back in there with coach with a mask on, just suffering through it. And I didn't really stop training at all. I had trained right through it. So it only slowed me down for about all of 5 days. But I just kept camp going, which is why making weight was easy. I was healthy, I was fit, and I was ready to rumble. And I did six rounds, and like I said, I could have done six more.
That's amazing.
So, but yeah, it definitely was looming for everybody, I think, involved for sure.
Yeah, and again, I'm glad that fight ended up happening. And I wanted to congratulate you on getting your promoter's license because moving forward to 2022. Right. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the plans? I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen in the future, but
no, we're all doing the same thing, my man. We're all kind of like, you know, with the news and everything that comes out with this Omicron stuff. I don't really like touching on it too much because we all hear too much of it now on the internet, but ultimately that aside, my plans and my goals have always stayed the same regardless of what's going on around me. I always just kind of keep that hindsight and go forward, right? That's all we can do in life is just kind of put one foot in front of the other and work towards our goals and try not to allow the things around us to be a hindrance to it. And sometimes things will get in our way, but, you know, it's like, what's that old saying? You know, I think Ali said it best. He said, you know, it's not the mountain that you have to climb that breaks your back, it's the pebble in your shoe, right? So it's all those little things along the way that build up that can sometimes get you off track. So I just kind of remind myself to stay on track. And that's what I'm doing now with this promotion. I'm understanding now, after so many cards over the years, I've been in this game a long time, I do feel as though I know how to do it right. And I have a terrific team behind me, and I have a great support system and a strong network all across HRM. I mean, I draw people from Moncton. I draw people from North Cumberland County. People come from Pictou. They come from all over the place to see me fight. Truro. And these are the people that are going to come and fill any place that I put a fight at. So 2022, April 15th, Real Deal Promotions rolls out, and I'm going to do my first show.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
I'm going to headline it and promote it, and I'm excited, man.
I'm really excited for you. And yeah, even more, I mean, I'm looking at every fight card that you've ever been on. You've been, I believe, one of the best sellers of tables and things always. Like that. So yeah. I'm seeing even with this recent one, I mean, every day there's new tables being sold and stuff. You have, you're right. You have a network of people that are interested in, and want to support
even
you.
Even that close to Christmas, I was very, I felt very grateful because it was so close to Christmas, so short notice that this card just got put together. So I was very happy. Yeah, very happy that so many people came out. And I mean, my tables weren't, I didn't have quite as many as I would have the show before, because the show before I was sitting around 30 plus and I was still building momentum the last 3 weeks going into the fight. So we're talking over $30,000+ of attendance. That's pretty good for one fighter. But I did do pretty good on this show. I did have, I would say, at least 75% of that crowd there for me, to the point where I couldn't actually catch all of the tables of friends and sports after the fight. I tried my best. I mean, I still have my hand wraps on, blood leak from my eye, and I'm still running around trying to get pictures with everybody. Thank everybody for coming, because the sport for what it is.
Yeah, that's amazing. So April 15th, we just had the announcement. Look forward to that. And you're going to be headlining it. And
yeah, April 15th, man, bringing it.
Awesome. And next thing I want to ask you about is something that I'm personally really interested in, is how you got involved with stunt work, because that's another one of your businesses that you're involved in.
Great fight. Sorry,
Oh, okay, guys, we just lost. Oh, are you back?
I'm back.
Yes. Sorry,
we're just going to a dead zone.
Yeah, by the way, everybody, if you're listening to this, you know, Kyle's being really gracious. You know, he's driving to and from locations, whatever. No, he's not driving. It's Colleen that's driving.
Yeah,
my hello, driving. Colleen. But yeah, there will be some moments in this podcast. Maybe the signal quality is not the best, but yeah, dead zones and driving. I mean, this guy, he can't be stopped. He's constantly, you know, doing one thing and another. He doesn't sleep. I don't. How long do you sleep a day?
I'll be honest with you. I don't sleep enough, but you know, I'll be lucky if I get 5 hours. I'll be real honest with you. It's something I've always had to work hard on, because my body, you know, I wake up like an alarm clock a few times a night. And then, you know, when 5 a.m. hits, I just hit the floor running. You know, at the end of the day, there's too much to get done in the day. And especially when I'm in training camp, you got to make hay while the sun shines. And even when the sun's not out, I'm still putting in the work. So there's always something to do where we're at.
Yeah, for sure. The question that I was asking is, how did you get involved in stunt work? Because that's something you're also involved in.
Yes, absolutely. I've been in film for over 10 plus years now, easy. That's actually how I met my wonderful girlfriend, Colleen Pace. I was in Stephen King's The Mist, the TV series, as a stuntman, a stunt prisoner in the later episodes, and I got thrown out of a train. Wow. And I ended up meeting her at the stunt party, and we've actually been together ever since. She was in stunts for 20 plus years. She's worked with Mariah Carey, Pierce Brosnan, a lot of famous people.
Wow.
And she's the real deal when it comes to the stunt world. They call her Queen Bee.
If anybody's listening and you're still single, maybe you want to take up being a stunt person. You never know. You might fall into the hands of, you know, your your next partner.
Hey, you never know, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's the way the world works, right? But yeah, no, I was in stunts for years. I was in Mr. D. I did some stunt driving in a couple episodes for a couple of the actors on there, like Colombian Nanny, and then there was another episode where I had to do a stunt. And then, like I said, I was in The Mist. Long before that, I was actually in a small film done by Director X, where it was a big riot that they did at the Bloomfield High School. That was kind of like my first real big stunt, where we all just, you know, we rehearsed it at Peter Seamoss's gym for a couple days. And then the day of, we did a 16-hour day of shooting where it was just brawling all day. We're geared up with, you know, pads and gear, and we're going to work. It was a lot of fun. And so some stunts were pretty big and pretty awesome, and some stunts not so much. They were a little bit small and, you know, not a big deal. But ultimately, it's been a pretty terrific experience, and I've been on some pretty cool sets. I was on Pure season one, season two. Me and my, like I said, my girlfriend Colleen, we were police officers quite a bit in those seasons of Pure. I've been to Digstown, a couple of the seasons of Digstown. And so, you know, I've stayed pretty busy over the years, but this last year or so, I've really just been focusing on my business and my boxing and focusing on my passions. Not as much film work, a little bit, but not much.
For sure. Next thing, Real Deal McNeil. Is this in honor of Evander Holyfield, the Real Deal, or
always been a huge Holyfield fan? Awesome. I followed him in his early days, and I always loved the way his, you know, I liked how he carried himself outside of the ring, and of course, who didn't love his fan friendly style? I mean, that man, win, lose or draw, always brought it. Didn't matter who he was in there with. But I don't know if it was necessarily him that instilled the nickname, because I didn't choose the nickname. See,
really?
I've always carried myself a certain way. And like I said, going all the way back to when I was a young man and even a boy, I was 9 years old telling people I'm gonna be a pro fighter in elementary school. And if you told me anything other than what I wanted to hear, well, we were gonna fight about it. I was a bit of a scrapper back in the day, and I had a lot of fights growing up, but I was never a bully, and I only ever just defended myself. But I had a rep. I definitely did, and I ate the chip on my shoulder, and I grew big and strong, and I dedicated my life to training and fitness at a young age and to the sport that I loved. And so now I am what I said I would grow to be, a champion, a pro boxer, a businessman, and I work for myself. And so one day at a fight, somebody hollered, "Real Deal!" I believe it was my buddy Goody, Corey Goodman. Shout out to him. And the name stuck, man. Everywhere I went, that was who I was. Kyle Real Deal McNeil.
That's awesome. You definitely are the real deal. I wanted to ask in kind of closing, was there any other things that you wanted to bring up? Any other ventures that you're involved in? You know, what's the best way for people to contact you and get involved with anything that you're doing?
Well, I mean, you know, like I said, Real Deal Fitness is my business. It's my passion. You know, sorry if I'm moving right now.
That's okay.
Actually grabbing a bunch of wood and I'm going to chuck it in my Jeep because we're driving into the woods right now.
Okay. No worries. This is the...
Real Deal Fitness is my business. It's my life. I love it. I train all ages. You know, I take pride in what I do as a personal trainer. And as I said, I've been doing it all my life. I mean, I know the who's who of trainers around Nova Scotia, and I tell you, there's not one person I'll say anything bad about me and about what I do for a living, because people respect me for my skill sets and for what I bring to the table. And in terms of being an athlete, that's another thing I take serious pride in. So, you know, if you follow me online on Real Deal McNeil 902, so real.deal.mcneil 902 on Instagram, or you follow my business real.deal.fitness on Instagram, you'll notice I have a very big following, and it's because I've worked very hard over the last years to build that following, not only through word of mouth, but, you know, just all the different industries I work within. And, you know, finding me on Facebook, I'm also on Twitter, you know, Champion Ethic is my Twitter. And, you know, I'm also on YouTube. I got a YouTube channel.
Oh, wow.
And, I just love what I do. You know, I'm down at Tribal Boxing with great people. Like I said, Jim Maloney's my manager, Bridget Stevens, my coach. And you know, we have such terrific people there, you know, with the best hearts. So real deal, man. I love what I do, and I can't wait to really bring it in 2022, man. I want to bring boxing back in a big way.
I certainly think you have the tools for that. And, you know, I just want to say a huge thank you there, Kyle, for coming on here. I know.
Man, I wish I could have got on sooner, buddy. It's not a problem. I can't wait to come on again. We can talk more.
Yeah. And, you know, I understand like things are pretty hectic. I mean, you got a lot on the go. I appreciate you coming on. I really look forward to 2022, Real Deal Promotions, in April. I really look forward to seeing that card go through. And
I'm excited.
Yeah. And, take care. Have a good one. Stay, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Stay warm. Hopefully that wood will help you out with that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like I said, there's always something to do here. Always. And, I really appreciate you having me on, and Merry Christmas to you as well, my man. And to anybody who's listening, Merry Christmas to you all. Stay safe over the holidays, and I hope to see you all in 2022. Real deal, baby.
Thank you, Kyle. Have a good day.
You as well, man. Have a good night. Take care.